another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went.
Hi, this is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's views of the changing world and the changing economic times and the things that we can do to live a better life, whether times get tough or even if they don't. Dictated on a 50-mile commute in a Volkswagen Jetta TDI between Arlington and Frisco, Texas, just like it always seems to be. Today we're going to talk about a new subject, and it's really going to be something we've kind of talked about before, but it's going to be kind of a way to systematically map out and set goals for your survival planning and for your preparedness planning and just, honestly, even for your lifestyle planning. Because if you prepare for a disaster and disaster does not come, you will have a more stable, more rewarding life in a world that doesn't have disasters than you will if you don't prepare for disasters. That's our whole philosophy here, that everything you do to prepare for the worst makes living at the best of times better. The sacrifices are minimal and the rewards are high. Before I go on with that, though, I do want to point out that as several people have written in and told me, we didn't have a show yesterday on Monday. And that's probably the first time since the beginning of the show, once we started rolling with it, that we've had a day we missed. I actually did record a show yesterday morning. I did it on reloading and the basic process of reloading and some different things you could do as a reloader that maybe you couldn't do by buying factory ammunition. As I was getting close to finishing the show, I shut the recorder off and realized that it just was a subpar show. It didn't flow well. I don't know if it was my lack of preparation. I don't know if just explaining the steps of reloading a cartridge don't flow very well. I'm going to take another stab at that show in the future. But what I decided was I wasn't going to publish a show that wasn't a good show just so there would be a show that day. That you guys deserve more than that. You deserve a top-quality show from a well-prepared outline and with me on the top of my game. And if I couldn't give you that, I would give you a day off and give me a day off to think about some other things. What that led me to do is I started thinking about, you know, how overwhelmed, and I'm getting a lot of emails, I'm getting a lot of comments, I'm getting a lot of things from people that are basically saying, look, everything you're saying makes sense, and especially, you know, the Starting from Zero podcast that you did makes sense, but I'm still overwhelmed. I mean, I'm just feeling like I'm never going to get to a point where I'm prepared, not even completely, but sufficiently. Well, I started thinking about how that relates to debt, how people feel the same way when they're sitting on, let's say, $20,000 worth of consumer debt, maybe a bad loan on a car, a couple credit cards, and maybe a few medical bills, maybe a department store credit card on top of that. And something that's been, you know, highly preached by Dave Ramsey, who anybody here would know I'm a pretty big fan of, about 80% of what comes out of his mouth anyway, he preaches this thing called the debt snowball. Now, the thing I have to tell you is that Dave Ramsey is not the inventor of the debt snowball. The theory and the practice has been around for a very long time. Dave just did a really good job of marketing it and kind of making it his own by doing that. But the way the debt snowball works is I would have, let's say, five major debts. And let's say one's about $700, one's $2,000, one's $5,000, one's $7,000. What I would do then is I would start out with that $500 or $700 debt, the smallest debt. I don't worry about which debt has the biggest interest rate on it, right? I only worry about which one is the smallest. And then I redo my budget and I crunch every penny. I start picking stuff up out of the house that I'm not using anymore and taking it to the pawn shop. I sell so many things. If I have kids, they're afraid I'm going to sell them. And if they're not afraid I'm going to sell them, they're at least afraid I'm going to sell their dog. All right, I don't sell them and I don't sell their dog, but I sell anything and everything that's not useful to me that I can get anything for. And I scrape every extra penny I can out of the budget. And I put 100% of the surplus on that smallest debt. And I figure out what I'm paying on that smallest debt outside of the scraped money. And if I can keep scraping money, fine, but sometimes you reach a point where you can't scrape it anymore. But out of the actual regular budget, where I'm not selling off the surplus, so to speak, I figure out how much of that debt that I was spending, you know, paying down, the actual base debt and the additional debt. While I'm doing that, I don't pay a dime extra on my other four debts. All right? And it's, and what happens is, this is the smallest debt, that the compounding payments on it pay it down very, very, very quickly. And all of a sudden, that debt goes to $0. Now, when that debt hits $0, I don't go, woohoo, let's have a party, let's go out and let's spend this extra, you know, maybe it's $100 I was putting on that debt this month, and it took me 7 months to pay it off. No, no, no. I take that $100 and I immediately put it on top of my second highest debt. All right? And what happens is I pay that debt off. Let's say that debt was $1,000 and my minimum payment on it was like $50, right? And now I'm paying $150 on it. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that that's about 9 months even with interest. So 9 months later, that debt's gone. And that debt went away almost as fast as the first very small debt. Now, if I had spread my efforts across the two of them, I would still have both of them 18 months later instead of being rid of both of them 18 months later. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to get to figure out what the next step is. I take that third debt, right, and I take that $150 of extra money. And I keep, again, I keep scraping for surplus anywhere I can find it, and I throw that on top of the $150. I put all that money on the next debt, and I pay it till it's down. Now, the thing is, as I go up in debt, I'm carrying more surplus from the prior debt with me. And as I pay a debt off, I'm taking a bigger minimum payment and adding it to the surplus to make a new surplus to apply to the next debt. By the time I get to my last debt, odds are I'm paying 2 to 3 times my minimum payment, and I'm paying it very fast down. And most people, if they take that seriously, they really strip and save, in 5 to 7 years, can pay off almost any amount of consumer debt that they could have gotten themselves into. Now, notice I didn't say pay off a mortgage. Now, some people do it. Some people pay off all their debt in a mortgage in 5 years, 10 years, something like that. And that's amazing when people do that. And it's something that definitely can be done. But that's the basic process. So I started thinking about that process, and how can I take that process and apply it to survival planning? And I came up with a process that's maybe a little more complex, because it takes a few more factors into play. But it works exactly the same way from a standpoint of getting things done. And the big thing about a debt snowball, when you start doing that, is you feel completely buried under debt. But you pay off that first debt and you go, I did it. I did it. I don't owe these people anymore. I'm free of them. And you get motivated. You pay off the second one, you get more motivated. You pay off the third one, now you're really motivated. Now you're finding more ways to get things done because you're excited about what you have accomplished. Alright? So while with the survival plan that I'm going to lay out for you, the way to prioritize this and set your goals, you're not getting more as you go from the last accomplishment. In other words, you pay off debt one, you get all the money you were paying on debt one to pay on debt two. Doesn't quite work that way, but the motivational factor and the psychology factor and the fact that things are getting crossed off the list work exactly the same way. And the logic behind it works exactly the same way. So let's go into what that is. Okay, the first thing that you have to do in this plan is something I've advised you to do in other podcasts. And that is you need to list all your risks for survival needs. And I mean, this could be anything. You know, losing a job to the end of the world as we know it because you believe the shock troops are coming. All right? And I mean, go from the most logical, rational things you can think of to the worst case scenarios you could possibly come up with. Global warming comes and the seas rise 20 feet. I mean, whatever, you have to plan for what you believe is the greatest risk through your research, through your knowledge, because it's going to give you the greatest amount of comfort. Because in the end, we're all going to plan and prepare the same way. We might change our priorities a little bit, but by the time I'm done with this, you're going to see how the tinfoil hat, full-blooded conspiracy believing individual that thinks everything's happening at the same time and everything's going to happen in the next 10 years is going to actually end up doing the same mechanical steps. Maybe in a slightly different order, but the same mechanical steps, the same food preparation, the same energy independent steps, all these things, same cash reserve system, the same, you know, maybe putting some money into some other forms of commodity like gold or silver. Everybody's going to end up doing basically the same type of thing. Because we all have the basic same needs. We need food, water, and shelter. And if we have food, water, and shelter, right, we can figure out how to get everything else that we need, and we can build everything else that we need, and we can innovate, and we can adapt, and we can overcome. But if you take away food, water, and shelter, we either starve, dehydrate, or freeze. And that's going to make putting priorities together very, very easy. But again, list everything you can think of that could go wrong. All right? Pandemics, you name it, whatever you can come up with. And then rank them. Rank them in the order of likeliness that they are to occur. In other words, yes, we could get hit by a giant asteroid, or yes, we could have Yellowstone's volcano swell and explode, and either one of those could send us into a equivalent of a nuclear winter for either a short or a very long period of time, depending on how severe either one of those events were. The likelihood of those two things happening are very, very low. You're more likely to win the lottery than you are for one of those two things to occur in the next 50 years. Hence, they go at the bottom of the list. Losing your job, you can get fired today. You can show up for work today, and they can tell you, you know what, we've outsourced you to India. Goes higher on the list. Now, you have to do your own ranking, and if you disagree with me, that's okay. You're still going to come up with a solution that's going to be very easy to follow and get you motivated and get you properly prepared over the foreseeable future. So you put those in any order you want, but my point is leave nothing out and start to put them in order, because it'll start to change the way you think about things, and you may be a little less worried about camouflage clothing and an AR-15 hiding in the woods, and a little more concerned about the practical down-to-earth matters of making sure you have food, shelter, and water. And someplace to go if your area in a suburban area turns into all-out chaos hellhole. All right? So that might be more of an incentive to kind of rank higher, getting a place out in the country to bug out to, if that's what you're going to do, or getting to a point where you can live outside of the city proper, and you don't have that much of a risk with that, kind of marauding horde type thing, because folks, some of the things that can go on, that's not conspiracy level stuff. Your neighbor will steal from you the day he can't feed his children. That's reality. History's taught us that. So again, list all of them, rank all of them, get them in an order that you're comfortable with. Once you do that, make a second list. This list should be all of your preparedness goals. These are simple goals. And, the first one might be $100 in cash reserved. All right? And I'm not saying that goes number one on your list. I'm just saying, as you start throwing these lists together, it might be that humble of a goal. Just $100 in cash swirled away somewhere that we have if we can't get to our money. It might be 1 week of reserve food supply and non-perishable food in the house that we would be able to stay home for a week and not worry at all after we ate up all the food in our refrigerator and freezer, which means that once you had that, you could probably, most people could make it 2 weeks easily. All right? And then the next goal in that vein might be, well, I want to get to where I can do that for a month, where my family can eat well for a month, right? On the other extreme of your goals might be, I want a complete photovoltaic and wind solar system, wind and solar combined system that provides me all the electrical needs for my home that I could possibly want, where I can separate from the grid. That might be a big long-term goal. I want my mortgage 100% paid off, might be another long-term goal. I want to buy and completely pay for a second home out in the country that I can evac to if I need to. Eventually, I want to move there. These are my goals, right? And I'm well along the way to doing a lot of these things. But it all started with a basic logical, which ones do I do first, that type of thing. And that's what I'm trying to get your mind in. So don't say, I got to take Jack's goals, because Jack's like some expert genius on this stuff, and his goals are the best goals. No, your goals for your life, for your lifestyle, for what you're comfortable with, for what you want for yourself and your family, they're the ones that are important for you. So list all those goals from the most lofty to the most humble. All right? Now, once you do that, what you need to do now is take that first list you made where you ranked the threats. And maybe you have things like regional weather is something that's on my top five of most likely things to occur. Maybe you have loss of job. or even if you're self-employed, that your sector takes a tank and you lose your business, or you're not making any income for your business, or you're not making sufficient income for your business. Maybe another one of your top five could be something like a death or serious illness of a family member. All right. These are all things that are not just possible, they're quite probable that one of them could come up in anybody's given life on any given day. But you take those top five. Now look at your survival goals, all right? And pick the five goals that you have that best address those five issues. And I don't mean one for each issue. Think about the commonality of those five things. What are the five, you know, what are the things that you would most lack if you lost your job, if your spouse died, if your spouse was seriously ill and you couldn't work because you had to go be with them to help them through whatever illness they had? If a regional weather disaster came and flooded or damaged homes in your area, all of these things that are highly probable, which five things in your goals that you have yet to accomplish best address the commonalities? Food shortage, okay? Money shortage. Those are your two big ones. So that should help you begin to prioritize those top five goals. Now, once you get those five, put those into a group and call them group number one. These are my top five goals, group number one. Now, do it again. Go back to your goals and look for 6 through 10 and put them into group two. All right? Very simple. So now you have 10 things that you've defined as clear goals that address the top five threats based on your personal threat assessment to your current situation, and you have them ranked in an order from 1 through 10. But you're not really ranked 1 through 10. I don't want you to think about it that way just yet. I just want top 5, second 5. That's it, just two groups. Now take your top 5 and look at those things. And what you'll find is that none of them are things like building photovoltaic systems. They're all going to be relatively minor things. Put life insurance in place. Save us some cash reserves. Put some food away in storage. Right? They're not going to be go out and buy a K-bar knife. Right? You know, that, you know, they may not even be put together a bug out bag in your top five. That might be number 6 for you. I don't know. Again, you have to make your own decision about these things. But what you're going to figure out is that none of them are outside of your ability, those first five, in any way, shape, or form. So what you do next is now you're going to rank them. But you're not going to rank them in the order that you think you need them, because if they made your top five against your top five risks, you need them all. So what are you going to do? You're going to rank them by which ones are going to be fastest and easiest for you to do. Which one can you do first? Fast today. Is there one you can do right now or this week? That's number one. Is there one that'll take a little bit more effort, but you can get it done a little quick? Great. That's 2, 3, 4, 5. Rank them. Go to your second group and do the same thing. Now work your list. Because your first one might be call up your insurance agent and add a little bit of life insurance. Your second one might be, I'm not going to go out to eat this week. I'm going to take the $50 that we were going to spend this week. I'm not going to go out to eat next week. I'm going to take that $50. I'm going to put it into cash, and I'm going to stick it somewhere in the house where it's safe. Right? Your third one might be, we're going to go to the grocery store over, and that's not that you can't work them concurrently, because again, this is not, but maybe financially, the things that are financially driven, you know, maybe you do some, you do work them consecutively, but if you can work them, you know, concurrently, which means all kind of at the same time or multiple goals at the same time, go ahead and do that. So at the same time you're doing that, maybe you just say, what I'm going to do is every week when we go to the grocery store, I'm going to put up 1 day's extra food of things that we eat but are non-perishable, 1 day's worth. Just going to figure out what that day is going to be, and I'm going to put that stuff together, I'm going to label it, I'm going to date it, and I'm going to stick it in the pantry. I'm going to begin my rotational process with my food where I'm actually using it, but I'm going to buy the surplus every week. Now, if you think about that, and 8 weeks seems like a long time, but when you do nothing, you wake up and 60 days are gone, right? So you do that process for 8 weeks, you've got 2 weeks of reserved food. Isn't that amazing? Now, by the time you've done those few things, and whatever your other two top five, and I believe in 2 months, you can knock out your top five. Unless you, you know, set really, really lofty goals. Most people can knock out their top five. All right? you'll get this sense of accomplishment, empowerment, and motivation, and you'll have started to find ways to make things happen. The very action, it's like getting in the game. You can't get a hit unless you pick the bat up and step up to home plate. No matter how much you practice, no matter how much you think about it, you got to get in the game if you ever want to make contact with the ball. And when you get in the game and you make contact with the ball, even if it's a base hit, it gets you a hell of a lot closer to hitting that home run, right? This makes perfect logical sense in sports. If it makes sense in sports, folks, it makes sense everywhere else. All right. So now, guess what you do? This is like a snowball on that snowball side. Now you take your second group of five. They become your primary group. You might have even chipped away at a few of them because the reason you put them there in advance was to make yourself think a little bit more. All right. Now, go back to your goal list. Look at it. See if the process of getting where you are has defined any new goals for you. Add them to your list. Re-rank your list. All right. Pick five, again, that are the goals that address the most likely things that could occur in your life, okay? You know, again, the job loss stuff, the things that are most common. Pick your next five, your group number three, right? Well, that group number three now is your group number two because your group number two has become your group number one. Take that second group of things. And again, rank them. Which ones can I do quickest? Which ones should I do fastest? Which ones can I do with the least amount of pain and suffering and sacrifice on my part? They go higher on the list. The ones that are going to take more effort go lower on the list. Work your list one at a time. Bam. 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 Another 8 to 12 weeks goes by. I'll guarantee you that most people can do off those top 10. Odds are, no matter what kind of survivalist you are, you're the survivalist that just is the Boy Scout survivalist to be prepared, or you are card-carrying Conspiracy Club member, by the time you're done with those 4 to 6 months of preparations in your top 10 things, both of those individuals' preparations are going to look very, very similar. If you follow that logical process, it won't be identical, but they'll be similar. And both of those individuals will feel a lot more comfortable with what's going to come their way next. That just makes sense. It's a very easy thing to do. And all that you have to do from there is continue to do that process. Now, eventually, just like in the debt snowball, you're going to run up against that $10,000 debt. Right, that big one at the end, or that $15,000 debt on a car that you should have bought, or things like that. And unlike, you know, debt snowball scenario with Dave Ramsey, he'll tell you if you can't afford your car, sell your car, even if you're in the hole, because your debt on a junker and the little bit of like headroom that you had to carry of debt from the previous loan is less than the debt on the car that you can't afford. Now you can afford it, you can pay it off, and eventually be able to go out and buy a better car. Doesn't quite work that well in the scenario for preparing for survival, except in the part where you're paying debt off, because that should be part of your plan. One of the biggest things you can do to address a job loss is not have any debt. If you have no debt when you lose your job, you're a hell of a lot better off than having a bunch of debt and you lose your job. Or if you have no debt when a family member becomes very, very ill, and you have to take care of them, you're better off than, you know, having a lot of debt in that situation. That's probably one of your plans anyway. But as you get up to things like maybe photovoltaic systems, right, or complete homesteads that are, you know, self-sufficient to whatever percentage you want them to be, it gets harder. I'm not saying it doesn't. But what will happen is by the time you get there, you know what? The power could go off for 90 days. The streets could be in all-out anarchy. You could probably hole up wherever you're at or evac to wherever you want to go and live 90 days to 6 months and not blink. That's a tremendous amount of empowerment, because just about everything except the complete and total destruction scenarios will clean themselves up to some degree in 90 days to 6 months. I mean, even, that's a pretty severe disaster that takes that long to really clean itself up. And if it's like a Katrina scenario, 6 months later, that place was still in bad shape, but the people that would have been prepared would have gotten out, and most of them would have decided to start a new life somewhere else, and a lot of people did. Or they are in a situation where maybe they can work a contract position or something and live somewhere safely until they can finally move back to where they call home. And that scenario happened for a lot of people that were prepared as well. It was the unprepared that ended up completely disassociated and dislocated and sitting in a stadium in Houston trying to figure out what to do with their lives, and then ended up living in a FEMA trailer. Right, and that's not how you want to end up if a scenario goes bad. And taking this approach will put you very, very quickly, less than a year, into a position where you're very, very stable, prepared to go where you need to go, or stay if you need to stay, and do the things you need to do, and have the reserves in place to last 2, 3, 4, or more months. It's not that hard if you follow that scenario. So that's really the entire scenario. I'm going to probably do a show this week on different disasters and what the ramifications are. And some of the things I have on a list for a show like that right now, I've already mentioned, they're like regional weather. Another thing would be maybe flu pandemic, job loss, death in your family, the actual economic collapse of the United States, or we go into a Great Depression or worse economic situation. I hate to tell you folks, but I don't think it's an unavoidable situation, but I think it's a highly probable, or at least a highly possible situation that we could go into. An overall food shortage. Here's the thing about a food shortage. A lot of these things would cause a food shortage, so you prepare for them the same way. That's why I came up with this logical process. In other words, if there's a pandemic, we can have a food shortage. If we have a high degree of infection into the food supply, like we had salmonella scares this year with tomatoes and peppers, if that was a much wider scare, that could cause a food shortage. A drought could cause a food shortage. Freaking meteor could cause a food shortage. Even if it's not a meteor that's big enough to totally destroy the planet, if we had a meteor strike somewhere that put a lot of dust and ash into the air, a major volcanic event. It doesn't have to be Yellowstone. We could have like a Krakatoa type event, and that could cause a major shift in climate that could cause food shortages. Because we have a lot more people to feed than when these things have happened before. We're a lot more dependent. So food shortage is a big one that could come from a lot of different other additional scenarios. Another one that I have is a major terrorist attack, because that can have ramifications. If, you know, 9/11 impacted a lot of lives outside of New York City and Washington, D.C., and outside of the families and friends of those that died. 9/11 had a major economic impact across the United States, and if we've learned anything from terrorist attacks, the next one will be a bigger attack and have a bigger impact. So even if it doesn't directly affect you, even if it's not a suitcase that's going off in your city, it could still have a major impact on your life. So you have to think about, what would that major attack do to me directly or indirectly? Again, climate change is an issue, and I'm going to give you some of my thoughts on climate change. You might be, since I'm not a big believer in the carbon footprint global conspiracy theory that, you know, Al Gore backs, that you are evil for eating cows and driving your car, even though he has a bigger footprint than you, and that buying carbon offsets isn't going to save the planet. Even though I don't believe that, you might be shocked at some of my views about climate change, global warming in particular, and the potential to have global cooling be an indirect result of global warming. And then serious illness. Those are the ones that I have. Now, what you guys can help me with, if you can think of any other major catastrophes you'd like me to go over in a show, send them to me, and I'll make them part of that show. Again, another thing I want to do is I want to remind everybody of our listener appreciation contest. If you go by our site and blog at thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on listener appreciation contest, you can join our contest. And basically, it just says that you'll tell other people about the Survival Podcast and recommend it to them through a couple different methods that are available to you there. Full details are at the site. I also want to point out I added a new page to the site. That is recommended forums. And if you have a forum, I'll consider adding it to the list. Just know it's not a sponsorship. You can't buy your way onto the list. It's going to have to be an active and valuable forum that fits the theme of what we do. You can look at the ones that are already there. There's a link under the pages section that says recommended forums. And you can go take a look at those forums. And if you have a forum similar that you participate in or own, recommend it to me and I'll consider it. But what I'm going to tell you honestly is those are all forums that I am active in on some level. Some I maybe post to once a month, some I post to maybe a couple times a week, but they're forums that I like enough that I go by, read them, look at them, get inspiration, and get questions from them, and honestly, get ideas for my show. So when I say those are recommended, I mean they're highly recommended. So again, that's that's a new resource that's there and available to you. And remember, keep your questions, comments, emails, and suggestions coming. If you've made a suggestion for a show, I want to point out that just because you haven't heard your show yet or heard me announce your show yet doesn't mean I'm not going to do it. It probably means that I'm doing the research, church, and organization because it's not something that I'm an immediate expert on. A couple examples. Someone recently suggested that I do a show about what to do for a school emergency where a shooter walks into a school or something like that. I got to be careful with that because if I give you advice and I don't be very careful about the way I structure it, and you follow it, or you claim to have followed it, or somebody says that you followed it, even if you didn't, and you end up getting killed in that situation, odds are your family's going to come try to sue me, and I really don't want that to happen. So I got to think about that one, but I do think it's a good topic, and I may not just do it exclusively as a school situation, but what to do in that type of an attack in any situation in a public space, be it a school, a mall, a church, anything else, because there are certain things that I think that people instinctively do that often get them killed. And if you think and you're logical and you get moving and do the right things, you can survive. Another topic was, you know, about infants. You know, what to do for your infants and all this survival planning. And folks, I got to do some more research about that because I've never had an infant. I'm a stepfather, and I came into my son's life when he was about 6 years old. And he wasn't wearing diapers, and he wasn't on a bottle, and he wasn't, you know, consuming formula or baby food. So I don't have any practical experience with infants. But it's something I'm going to try to put together. Maybe a show that's not just on infants, but on kids in general, from the infant up to, you know, through toddlers up to, you know, older kids, because it's something we really need to consider because they're the ones that often get the scaredest or panic the most in the older kid situation, wherein the infants are the least capable of doing anything for themselves and have to have anything done. So I'm going to do some shows on some topics like that. So just again, if you're making suggestions and you're not hearing your shows right away, know that it's probably because I'm doing the research. I'm trying to make sure that when I do your topic, I do a good job with it. Again, I'd like to thank you for tuning in to the Survival Podcast. Please go by our site and again, comment, question at survivalpodcast.com. And remember, what we're here to do is help you learn how to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't.
You can scream and you can holler. It really doesn't matter because it all gets spent.